Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read. As I read it, there's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and enjoy. Hopefully enjoy. And joining me today, like normal, is Juliana.
Hello, everyone.
And today we're going to be talking about an Adrian Tchaikovsky book. Surprise, surprise.
Again.
Another. The most prolific, well-known science fiction author at the moment. And I've also got some outstanding fantasy series of his that I'm also reading as well. First of all, let's get to some feedback. Let's get to some feedback follow-up communications from someone.
Oh,
Soren put some messages on the SFBRP listener group. He says, because we're talking about the must-read science fiction book.
Yes,
of the must-read books. He says, two books that I was surprised were not on the list are The Tourist, he said. The thing is, The Tourist is a book I gave like 4.5 stars to or 4 stars to. And I have zero recollection of anything about the book, except that it's a time travel book told from the point of view who aren't on the time travel adventure, but who are interacting with people who, or a person who is a time traveler. But it's all told, and you've got to piece the story together from bit by
bit.
I don't remember anything about it except I really enjoyed it, and the conceit of the book I remember.
Yeah,
but nothing actually about it.
Okay. Did I read that?
No, you didn't read it. But also on Goodreads, it's got like a 3.1 star. Like it's honestly of all the books that I've ever reviewed on the SFBRP, it must be in the bottom 10 books of generally how do people like it. But for me, I'm lapping it up. I'm like, oh, this is great. It's like a fun thing as well. So there were other books like this, which I gave high marks to. Another one is China Mountain Sheng.
Yes.
Reviewed it around about the same time, 4.5 stars. I have no memory at all of that. Like if you told me the character of any, or like any character name or anything that happened at the book, I'd be like, yeah, maybe, you know, maybe it'll come back to me. But I couldn't name a single thing that happens in that book.
Okay.
Because it's more of like a slice of life, like, oh, meanwhile over here, and this is happening, you know, there's not like a forward driving momentum to the plot, which is kind of what science fiction is known for.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Forward driving plots, stuff happening, and then the next thing happening, and that leads to this and that. So books which I have no memory of at all don't make it into the SFBRP must reads list.
Okay.
Another one is The Light Brigade. And that's on the list. He obviously just didn't.
Yeah, I was just about to say that must be on the list.
It is on the list. So there it is. So I mentioned, you know, there is a link there to the, there is a list. If you go to sfbrp.com and just right at the top, there's a menu, or click the little, you know, 3-bar hamburger menu and click on must reads. There's a whole list of all the books that we've been talking about there. So that's one bit of feedback. He also praise for Cryptonomicon, you know, because the last episode we were talking about Anathem.
Yes.
By Neal Stephenson. I was like, I've not read The Diamond Age or The Cryptonomicon, which is this other two well-regarded big books. Turns out that's not science fiction. It's like historical fiction about code breakers in the Second World War.
Yeah, that was one of the books that I went to the library once, or to a bookshop, and that was a book that was there, and I got it for some reason.
You started reading The Cryptonomicon?
Yes. And
but it's like 2,000 pages
long. Exactly.
You didn't get into
it. So I didn't read it.
All right. So maybe that's the one that you didn't get into. And then also, Ori has mentioned, he put in some romantasy recommendations.
Oh.
Because, you know,
we
did ask for some of those.
Yes.
So this was in January. I'm not going to go into those because, I'll have to look them up. I haven't really looked them up, but maybe I'll get to it. And then, and then since the SFBIP sometimes covers TV shows, I'd be interested in a review of season one of Pluribus.
Uh-huh.
And perhaps compare and contrast it with Sylvain Neuville's The Many, which releases in April. So I'm guessing that's a book. So of course it's sort of like the Pluribus TV show.
Yes. I don't have
any novel opinions, but I do find it interesting. Like when
let me put it this way. We are currently watching
Currently watching it. We're like 5 episodes in.
Yes.
I don't know how many, maybe it's 8-10 episodes or whatever it is.
Yeah.
All I want to say is that it's fun to watch a TV, like a science fiction TV show. And there's obviously enough people on there who have read enough books to understand like the things that you should be doing in that that style of TV show.
Yes.
Even to the fact, and I mentioned this as soon as we saw it, like, you know, it starts off, it's very, you know, it's very Contact savvy,
oh, yeah,
you know, from the movie.
Right there.
But then it's weird because it definitely gets Day of the Triffids to the point where in the Day of the Triffids, one of the main characters is a romance or like a, you know, like a sexy autobiography. Anyway, she's known as an author who writes books, and she's just known for a trashy, you know, sexy book. And then she has to make a life for herself not being a sexy book author.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, it's a fun kind of tie into the romantasy genre as well.
Yes.
So we probably won't do an episode about it, but we are watching it, and so far generally enjoying watching a TV show about the worst person in the world.
I get constantly so frustrated with the whole thing.
With Carol.
Oh my God.
But she's meant to be the worst person in the world.
But it's quite interesting that they are bringing it up on the forum there, because in the context of the book we're talking about today.
Yeah,
I actually had connected feelings.
Oh, about
between the book and the TV show.
Well, let's get into today's book, today's episode, which we're talking about, Shroud by Adrian Tchaikovsky.
Yes,
it's a book that came out last year. I'm guessing it's probably going to be nominated for Hugo's and Nebula Awards. It feels like that kind of book.
Yes.
It was on the list of the, you know, the Goodreads Reader's Choice Award. It was on the list of science fiction there as well. And it's another people turn up at an alien another solar system. We don't get anything along the way. It's just like they turn up and what happens, and there's going to be aliens, there's going to be first contact, and it's going to be about humans, like normal baseline humans, let's say, you know, like not like some science fiction where people have got or augmented or they're, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff going on. It's like, no, these are just general normal people who are put into a desperate situation on an alien planet, and they've got to get through it, is the main bulk of this novel.
Yes.
And I just want to say that last year we reviewed Alien Clay, and you really liked Alien Clay as well. I really liked it. I think we gave it like four stars or 4.5 stars.
Yeah.
I think I rated it slightly less than you because when it got through to the end, it was like, yes, I see what's coming. And then it kind of just played out. And I was like, I didn't want it to just play out. I wanted there to be like one more twist along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Spoiler for the review of this book, there is that one more twist along the way in this book, which I didn't, I mean, a lot of it I understood what was going to happen, but there was just a few more steps between what I thought was going to happen and when it actually happened. You know, there was just a few more steps.
Yeah, that's true.
That's it. So the framing of this is that in science fiction, the really annoying part of science fiction is when people arrive at an alien planet or there's an alien something, an encounter or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the scientists are really stupid.
Yeah.
Talking back to Pluribus, it's sort of like, no, you're in isolation. The reason is, and you're like, they're going to take the gloves off, and then they take the gloves off, and then they're going to come out of it. And you're like, it is so stupid. Like, and it always happens like in the movie Prometheus in Aliens and sort of like, and then they just take off their helmet. You know, we watched, what was the movie that we watched? The Galaxy Quest.
Yeah.
And the red shirt character is sort of like, no, I'm, you know, because they're people in a TV show and he's the red shirt.
Yeah.
Sam Rockwell playing that. He's sort of like, don't just open the door. What are you doing? Put your helmet on. We could have all died. And they go, it's like, no, the air's all right. So I'm like, we didn't know the air was going to be breathable. You can't just open the door. Like, you know, they're just playing along in that way, and they're commentating on it. So Adrian Tchaikovsky has this problem of like, I want to put people in a stupid situation where they have to come in contact with some aliens.
Yeah.
And if anybody in this book was competent, or if we want to believe that the characters are competent, how would they get into a situation where they're not quarantining and stuff like that? So in the Alien Clay book, he sets it up that these are prisoners, these are expendable prisoners who are just being sent to this, you know, camp, like this, you know, research station camp by an authoritarian, like, science science authoritarianism yeah. kind of thing, and that like we have a way that is we're going to send you there. You're, you know, upstarts back home, but you're useful because you're scientists, and we're going to send you there, and you're expendable. So it makes sense that they are sent out and are just like breathing alien spores, and you know,
yeah,
all that kind of stuff.
Kind of part of the deal.
It's part of the deal, and it makes sense logically that people are expendable. So of course you just send them down to the planet and not worry about their safety, and it can kick off the plot, which isn't satisfying mm-hmm. in a world where, oh, these are hyper competent, well-funded people who are there to do their job, and they've been selected because they're highly competent and all that kind of stuff. And then they get there and they just open up the helmets, and you'd be like, why don't taste, don't lick the alien clay, or don't and leave your helmet on. But of yeah. course, for a movie, they have to take that off. Yeah. And so what I like about this is that they're in this hyper ultra like corporate capitalist system, which has stripped all of the solar system of everything, and then they're like,
it's all about resource
mm-hmm. extraction, and the people are, and they're like, well, if you don't do the job, you're just going to be put back in cold storage, mm-hmm. and if you are, each time that you come in and out of cold storage, you're probably not going to make it. So like, this, like, doing a bad job or not being willing enough to risk yourself or whatever it's going to be is like in this thing where they have to earn, you know, they have to earn their money back, or they have to earn themselves, earn time, not in cold storage.
Yes.
And of course, everybody wants to get to that next level of promotion.
Yeah,
or
you want to get to middle or higher level
yeah,
management
positions.
Yeah.
Weirdly, the other book that I was that I just finished as well by Claire North, Slow Gods mm-hmm. by Claire North. There is one faction there. There's one civilization, like people who are very, very similar. It's like they are people who all of them are on the clock, and they're trying to earn back their freedom and stuff. So it's quite funny that Claire North and Adrian Tchaikovsky, two British science fiction authors, both came across pretty much the same setup for their main character, to like, well, why would you ever be in this situation? It's way too dangerous. It's sort of like, what if your parents are in debt and they sold you into indentured servitude, and that's actually a better life from you because, you know, or whatever it would be, you know, there's a way. Because if your parents don't sell you or don't abandon you,
This is now the Claire North book.
This is the Claire North book. I'm just saying.
Really,
but I'm just saying, you're frowning at me. I'm just saying, like, there's ways to make it that if your parents don't sell you and then they die, you take on their debt.
Yes.
So it's actually more difficult for you. So if they sell you into slavery, although they're very careful that it's not slavery, it's actually better. Anyway, we could talk about that in the next episode when we get to that. I'm just saying it's quite funny that in this hyper capitalist system where everything is about resource extraction, you can put aside a lot of ethics and morality, which you would like to think would be there if these people were like competent, well balanced humans from a good situation.
Yes.
But it's actually kind of a shortcut to say, like, look, everything back home is so terrible that this is actually a good deal for these people.
Yeah.
And now here they are in the most desperate situation. Yeah.
And they don't actually want people to have a certain level of expertise and apart from what they were, you know, what they are kind of paid to do. You know, it's like they select people for very specific tasks.
Yes.
They don't want them to be too reflective of
no.
Like anything
it's
further.
It's like as soon as you start thinking too widely, you're back in the freezer.
Yeah. That's pretty clear. That comes out.
And I really like that at the start. They're like, and now let's get this person out the freezer. They're like, oh no, they're way too enthusiastic. Okay, they go straight back in the freezer. And it's sort of like, oh, I thought they would be quite fun. And some of those people do come back later, which is actually quite good. It's like, oh, now, all right, now this is where those people
are. You need them.
Now you're a tool.
Yes.
And so our main character is Juna. Juna? How do you pronounce it? Juna or Yuna?
Juna Sealander. That's how I read her.
Okay, Juna. I was just wondering, because I didn't listen to an audiobook. We both read the ebook version of this.
Yes.
So I'm just having to do these names off the top of my head, not quite knowing what it was going to be.
Yes.
So Juna Sealander is in a bad situation with Maesty Etienne.
Yes.
Is that how you would also...
Yeah.
Sté Étienne is what it is. So it's always Juna. Although Juna is a first-person narrator So we don't, like, a first person point of view character.
Yeah.
So at the start, their name wasn't really mentioned, or it was mentioned, but you like skip over it. And
no, actually the written book that we, yes, like the ebook that we've started, it yeah. has literally a list at the beginning who the characters are and their names. Ah. And you obviously skimmed that.
Of course, I just skipped it. Like, why would I ever read a glossary or an introduction or anything like that? No, skip, just straight yeah. into the story.
Persons and appearance or whatever.
Yeah, personae dramatis or dramatis personae. Yeah, whatever. So, of course, I just skipped straight over that. So I'm just straight into it and going, oh, great, like a hero or whatever. And then I was like, wait, what's their job again? You know, like yeah. exactly that kind of thing. But then it's very well explained that Juna is a... not the manager, but like the manager's assistant, who is obviously doing all the work for the manager. The downtrodden secretary
I wouldn't say she's a secretary. The thing is, also, she's never mentioned as being a secretary. She's always mentioned as the assistant of the boss.
Yes, but I'm just saying that as
yes. And the thing that she is, she's the liaison, the interpersonal relationship yep. liaison. So she has to translate the communication between the people who are not capable of talking directly to each other and make each other understand the other person.
Yeah.
So she's always in between things, and because she's then always the messenger, or she has to then, you know, say the things to the people, she always gets all the things, like yeah. all the weird vibes between people, all the
and
emotions.
Also has to become the second best expert in yes. all of the other five areas of expertise.
Yeah, because to literally translate one thing to another person, you kind of have to have a certain understanding of what you're talking about, yeah. of course.
So it all starts off up in space around this alien planet, which has got lots of, you know, radio activity, and I can't quite work out where all this radio wave activity is coming off this moon. It's a moon, isn't it, going around
yes.
a bigger planet?
Yeah.
And it's all dark and
it's very loud on the electromagnetic yeah. spectrum.
So they one thing comes to another, there's a bit of a catastrophe, and they end up down on the planet's surface. In a few of these crew members end up down there in these little pod kind of things, and they have to make their way back to a space elevator that they put in there earlier, and along the way encounter gribbly aliens. Let's put it that way. So that's all from their point of view of all of those bits. But it is also a first contact book. But the genius of this book, or one of the genius parts of this book, is that it's also a first contact from the point of view of the aliens on the planet.
Yeah.
Back towards what it's like to have first contact with humans.
Yes.
When the humans never come out of their little spaceship.
Yeah.
And you can't see the humans.
Yeah.
Which is always the fun thing about, you know, first contact. So it's from the human's point of view, and the aliens come down. They're like, oh, well, they're not actually the aliens. They're robots, but they're being controlled by the aliens. And then you get further back in, and you realize, oh, the aliens are these small things that are driving these bigger things, which are actually in those things that are then in a spaceship, which is even bigger, you know, all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But that now that's all like told from the point of view of an alien looking back at the humans coming down to
yeah.
visit them.
And this is one of those things that Adrian Tchaikovsky is so good at, and when you read a book of his in this kind of style, and he's written a few of these kind of books where we get to actually experience
from the
alien,
point
perspective
of view, yeah.
And it is one of those things that he's just so good at, or in these books it is just so good to perceive humans from a different perspective, like to just step one way back.
Yeah, but I
and
think
look at,
what
okay.
I think is really great about this is that it isn't just from one step back. I actually think it's from two or three steps back.
Yes.
And that's the, of course, once you understand that, well, of course, it's not once you understand it. Once you see things from the alien's point of view, you're like, of course, as soon as, like, once you start getting into it, you're like, oh, I know the fun logical trick that Adrian Tchaikovsky is going to play later on and the reveal of this. Again, it's clever and it's well done to get there, but you do see it coming.
Yes.
I could see it coming. But it's fun how long both the humans and the aliens don't understand each other and don't understand what's going on. Like, the alien, like, never understands the humans. And the humans like until right near the very end, never understand the alien, and yet we get this really fun story playing out between the aliens and the humans with neither of them ever quite understanding, or for a long time even getting close to understanding each other.
Yeah.
So it's like two different stories going on. It's the same story, but it's two stories. And it brings back one of the books which are on the SFBRP must reads list, which is Elder Race, where he does the same thing.
Yeah.
One, it's like every opposite chapter, one is a science fiction book, mm-hmm. and the other one's a fantasy story, and it's the same story being told from two point of views. One is a science fiction story told from people who are on this planet, and the other one think that all the science fiction stuff that's happening around them is fantasy.
It's magic.
And both viewpoints are correct, yep. but they are so alien to each other that he can do it. So that's what this book feels like. It feels like Adrian Tchaikovsky going like, well, now let's do that again. Like, let's do that same storytelling. We're going on an adventure. Stuff's going to be happening. And quite a lot of it, we're going to be told what happens from twice over. Once, sometimes we're going to get the alien's point of view and then the human's point of view. Sometimes we get the human's point of view and then the alien's point of view.
Yeah.
But there's that really fun, you know, Rashomon Pulp Fiction kind of thing. You go, oh, those people. Oh, right. They're doing this thing. Oh, this person. But, you know, it's that it's an alien trying to get to know humans and humans and failing. And humans trying to get to know the aliens and failing.
I would actually disagree on that point a bit.
What?
Because I don't think the humans try to understand the alien at all.
Okay, that is true. Over time, they come to understand the aliens, even if... But I think it's because they start off from just such a different mindset and such a different yeah. view that they don't even understand that there's anything to understand.
Yes, and I want to... I don't know quite how I want to talk about this, like, without saying anything about this. I think I would just recommend this book. It's really good. And I want to just now say that the next few things I say might be a bit too in-depth for what we're talking.
You want to avoid spoilers or
yes,
whatever.
Yes, but okay. I'm not sure what...
Okay,
so I want to say two...
Let's blow the spoiler horn.
Okay.
We are obviously enthusiastic about this book that we're highly recommending.
Yes. Go and read it and then come back.
If you start reading it, once you understand what's going on, which again, we've kind of said, like, it's quite a long way into the book when we get the alien's point of view for the first time. Mm. And when it came along, it was a really big surprise for me that we were going to get so much from the alien's point of view.
Because okay.
I didn't know anything about it. You know, this is very gribbly. It's playing, it's a bit Peter Watts. It's a bit Alistair Reynolds in terms of like setting up a dire situation yeah. on a planet or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you've got to get through to it. So I just want to say that like that's the only thing that we've spoiled so far is that you do get quite a lot from the alien's point of view.
Yes.
We haven't given away plot points from much later on in the book, but it is I think it is a really fun read. I do have a few criticisms, but not that many, and yeah. I would highly recommend it. Rate it, well, I don't know, high, you know, four and a half stars easily.
Yes.
It's probably the best new science fiction book I've read in a while.
Yes.
And so with all that said, do you want to say anything before we blow the spoiler horn, and then we can talk for 20 minutes about what yeah. actually happens near the end.
I want to say it's what, and again, I think I've said it multiple times reading an Adrian Tchaikovsky book. His use of language
yeah.
is very refreshing. He's not using simple language. It's often like I think it generally in an Adrian Tchaikovsky book, it comes down to me having to click on the word and let it be defined by you know the internal library,
yeah.
the ebook library. That happens probably about three or four times over the course of an Adrian Tchaikovsky book.
Yeah.
And I like that.
Yeah.
I come from a perspective of a person whose English is the second language.
Yeah.
And I want to learn more words all the yeah. time. And often that happens in Adrian Tchaikovsky books.
You want to learn the word recognizance.
No, I actually want to learn terms that you generally don't hear in spoken language specifically. So I think the writing is very good.
Yeah.
Also, the different language use for the different people and the different the species and aliens. And
yeah.
he's just really good at like I mean, as an author, he has to literally come up with an alien and how that alien character thinks.
But what I like and about his writing is that it doesn't feel belabored in anything. Like, it's he's definitely a guy who's like, look, I'm going to be writing 5 novels a year.
Yeah.
I've just got to get this out. And he's got a good enough voice, like writing voice or good enough writing style, that he can just put it down and it comes out and it flows and it just, you know, sentence to sentence, it all just works.
Yeah.
And it's not fussy in that way, but he will sprinkle, like, there will be these funny, like, it's just funny. A lot of the time it's sort of like just really fun writing and really funny writing. But it's not like showing off. Like, it's not like showing off how good it is or how beautiful it is. It's sort of like, look, we're in this situation. I've got to write this. What's the briskest and easiest and also like most fun way of talking about this?
And it doesn't shy away from actually describing things. Like, you really get a good impression of how things feel and look like. And there's sometimes books, and we talked about that before as well, where the author really leaves a lot of the work of the imagination work to the reader.
And all you've got to do is imagine, what was it like? And now it was like a set from an old TV show, science fiction TV show.
And you're whatever comes to your head, that's
sort of like,
all right,
so well done for just saying, you know, Star Trek. You know Star Trek. Think of that. Just think of Star Trek. Yeah, that's close enough. Yes. All right, move on. Yeah.
So that's what really is very, very good in his books and this one as well.
All right.
Okay.
A little bit of praise. Let's then blow the spoiler horn, and then we can get into plot points and thematic stuff, which I think is very clever.
Yes. Okay.
All right, do it. What do you want to think? You want to talk about stuff that happens later on in the book?
No. I want to generally talk about topics. And in the way that I already said, I see really, really big parallels to Pluribus. There are two things that keep happening in the science fiction.
Okay, we're talking about Pluribus, which is the Apple TV show. Only 5 episodes in.
Yes. However, as much as Pluribus as in Shroud as well, two words just keep like banging in my head.
Yeah.
One is ignorance.
Yeah.
And the other one is arrogance.
Yes.
And just saying these two words, I'm sure you immediately understand what I'm talking about in respect to Pluribus.
Yes, for
and
sure.
And in respect of Shroud.
Yeah.
And it is... these are the kind of things that are super frustrating to me, to just especially see humans, and that is on the level of humans to to aliens, but also humans to humans, and to humans to nature and plants and animals, everything, right? It always comes down to a certain ignorance and a certain arrogance, and in the way that humans think like, we are the clever and the smart ones. Yeah. We know how it works. And if we can engineer our way in there, and that is obviously the best way of doing it. And and in Shroud, you meet an alien race that does exactly the same thing.
Yes, that is true. That's what I thought was the cleverest. That's the thing that I think is one of the cleverest things about this book.
Absolutely.
And that's what I was like saying before, is that you're so deep into the book. It's literally like in the last few pages of the book when the two sides actually go, oh, I think I understand that. And the other side is like, oh, I think I understand. And it's held off for so long.
Yeah.
Most science fiction stories or most science fiction novels or whatever, the part where the two sides recognize what's going on, and like, oh, now I understand you. Oh, now I understand you. Mm. It allows for like growth of the characters and growth of the alien towards you. Or maybe like if we bring up Contact, that's about, you know, a message sent over from, you know, a distant galaxy or whatever. But the alien who sends that message is always, they know what's going on. They know what's in at stake here. They understand the full situation.
Yeah.
And us humans are the ignorant ones.
Yes.
But what Shroud and a bit of Pluribus has got in common is that that neither side really understand the other side.
Yes.
For like I say, in terms of Shroud, for the duration, which is like, it's like a big it's like a, it's he's taking a big swing to have both sides be ignorant and arrogant yes. for that long.
Yes. However, and that's now the yeah. big thing about Pluribus, yeah. about Shroud,
okay.
is the approach to it. And the alien approaches this very much with curiosity.
Yes.
Wanting to learn, wanting to expand.
Yeah.
And the humans want to do the opposite.
Yeah, I think part of that is that the people who go down to the planet aren't the... they're the inventor and the administrator rather yes. than the rather than there was a what is it, a xenobiologist there,
yeah,
and then when they get the xenobiologist out of the tank later on, there is a bit more yes. connection there,
yes, but the whole time when they were on the down on the planet, I thought, okay, now they're gonna just pause a second and think, how can we try to understand the alien?
Yeah, but they just have that one signal.
That's
hey,
it. That's it.
Hey,
then they
hey,
stop. Yeah. And they stop. And they don't try to...
Their goals
nothing.
Their goals are not aligned
oh
with...
Oh, my God.
They
so
are not scientists at that point.
No.
They are shipwreck survivors.
Yeah. And they and it's really funny because one thing that comes up in this book quite a lot is the analogy of ants and an ant's nest.
Yeah.
And I think this is exactly the kind, is a really good analogy of what happens if you just have two humans in a situation and they think they know exactly what their yeah. task is, what they need to do. In the same way in Pluribus, Carol knows exactly what's right and exactly what she wants, and then she does the most
stupid thing. Yeah, but she's the worst person
thing.
In the world.
She's like the stupidest, like, oh my God. I every time I sit on the couch and I get so frustrated with her actions. And
no,
like,
I think it's really good.
Oh my God.
I mean, I know that I'm meant to find Carol the worst person in the world.
Of course we're meant to do that. But it's like this whole, yes. And then, so I'm sitting there being frustrated at like this whole idea of humans thinking, yeah, well, of course you were the smart ones. And of course the alien is just an alien mass of not
yeah,
thinking
it's just
thing.
A non-thinking gribbly thing,
yeah, and even once they've figured out okay there might be some thinking, they think like, oh yeah, it's probably like an ant, and it's like
yeah,
not very
yeah.
it's just doing the
it's
things
it's the constant assumption that there will never be anything which is like, if I don't understand it right now,
yeah,
it means that it's dumb and can't be understood, or
yes.
it's yeah, and it is that what's the thing where like what's the principle, like the Dunning-Kruger effect is like the less you know, the less you know that you know,
yes.
and the people who know more think they think less just because they know how much they don't already know, and it's whatever
yeah.
the
it plays very much
whatever
in that,
the
in that realm.
It, again, the science behind the Dunning-Kruger effect has been debated, but there is a phenomenon that people observe, which mm-hmm. is the less you know, the better you think you are at it. Like,
yes. And this is definitely what's
more
going
than 50%
on.
Of people think they're an above average driver,
yeah.
that kind of thing.
Yes.
And that's what it comes down to here, is that like when you're a big connector, like when you assume that you're the cleverest person and you're not the cleverest person, it's like when you sit down and play cards, there's always the what is it, there's always the rube, there's always the dummy, and if you look around and you can't see the dummy, you're the dummy.
Yes. Yes. There's just no reflection.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No reflection at all. And in some places I thought, this is really clever. Adrian Jacobsky does Independence Day the other way around.
Yeah, yeah. But he does do Independence Day, but actually doing Independence Day the other way around, what he's doing, like he's already done his like, you know, the Fire Upon the Deep. Yeah, Fire Upon the Deep by Verna Vinci.
Yes.
Which is his, you know, aliens, which are like dog seals, which all come together and
yeah.
things like that. And then Adrian Tchaikovsky was obviously influenced by, with the spiders on the planet,
yeah.
was with Deepness in the Sky, which is the next book in the deep Verna Vinci zones of thought kind mm-hmm. of thing. And there he has a similar way of going, well, how can we have an adventure on a planet? And it's sort of like, yeah, if you go too far, people get stupider. Like, we literally have a way to have planets adventures where some people are stupider, or stupid people can arrive on a planet where like everyone is just like baseline more intelligent than them.
Yeah.
But what happens at the end of Deepness in the Sky, spoiler for that book and for this book, I guess, is that there is a reverse Independence Day, or, you know, the humans are Independence Day'd, in that the spiders down below use their ant colonies to decode the human signals,
yeah.
and secretly decode it all, and then actually be able to take over or affect the stuff that's happening up in orbit. Because the humans just assume that they're the scientists up there and they're looking down on these spiders and they're obviously the superior ones and the spiders down there, even though the spider technology is accelerating really, really quickly.
Yeah.
They don't understand that the spider's ant colony kind of stuff can deprogram all of that, you know, and all of that stuff is happening in Adrian Tchaikovsky's Children of Time, where that's all about spiders farm ants and the ants are the ones that do all the calculating and all that kind of stuff. And so that's the same thing that happens here. They do the, the human's computer system has been infected by the aliens via the cables and all of that kind of stuff. Yeah, what's up?
That's not actually the part of Independence Day that I was aiming at.
I'm just saying I just wanted to run with that as well.
Yes. But
yeah. So what are you talking about?
In Independence Day, the aliens literally turn out to be a species going from planet to planet, stripping it from its resources.
This
is what I'm saying.
Right. That setup is it, yes.
That is the setup. And
the Independence Day was kind of what I was referencing before about when they turn up, it's one big ship. And then out of that big ship come the smaller ships, which is still the size of the planet. It's still the size of a city.
Yeah.
And then out of that come the spaceships that are flying around.
Yes.
And then out of that they get an alien, which looks like an alien, but that's actually still an exoskeleton. And then they open that up and then they finally get down to what it is. And that's what I was saying. When the humans go down to down to the alien planet, they're like, oh, here is the carapace of an alien. It's like, and they break it open and it's just the machine that the alien is. In this case, the humans are in a machine.
Yes. So it's a very clever combination of the different things that you've experienced, but the other way around.
Yeah,
as in
like...
Is this question of, are we the baddies here?
No, and he sets it up very clearly that yes, the humans are the baddies.
Absolutely.
And that's the interesting thing in that in this world where the humans are pretty much saying we have to become the von Neumann machine or whatever it is. If we don't replicate ourselves and spread out through the entirety of the solar system, you know, our capitalism, you know, capitalism is based on endless growth.
Yeah.
So what we need to do, if we're going to be the best capitalists possible, we need endless growth. And what these other authors, like I say, Alistair Reynolds, which when you actually look deep into the future of the Revelation space world, the signals that come back from the future, everyone's really disappointed because this green stuff has spread out through the entire solar system and everyone,
the plague,
this plague that comes out, it turns out those are humans in the far future. We're the problem, or whatever it is. And in these systems is actually spreading out. And this is, we're talking about Greg Egan's Diaspora. It's actually a negative thing for, like, the one thing that all of the future human species are trying not to do is become self-replicating machines.
Yeah.
And if that's a possibility, they're like, no, we've got to squash that. Like, we can't be the thing that takes over the entire galaxy. And this happens time and time again in these books where the main bad thing is the endlessly replicating thing which swarms around the entire galaxy.
Yeah.
And in this book, humans are like, well, that better be us. Like,
expansion for all
that is now
consequences.
The main bad guy in so many science fiction books where people come up with, like, oh yeah, the wolves are there to stop this happening in the future. You know, whatever the wolves are going to be like in these things. I'm like, yeah, and this thing comes through and what its only job is to stop the exponential spread of other species or whatever.
Yeah.
They're just programmed to roam around the universe to stop this happening. And they look like the bad guys, but they're actually the good guys because they're stopping exponential growth of gray goo programming.
Yeah.
And then, and in this book, the humans are like, yeah, that's us. We are the bad guys. Like, of course, they're not knowing that. But if you've read any other science fiction, you're like, all right, so the humans are the bad guys. Let's move on with the story. It's like baseline that is just acknowledged.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, really interesting to see this kind of mindset of, hey, let's just go to this thing and then strip it of all the resources and then move on.
And then go to the next thing and strip that of all the resources.
It's exactly Independence Day. And, one thing I thought was really interesting, and I wrote it down, because not only is all of these topics included in this book that we just talked about.
Yeah.
But also what's included, again, like in The Children of Time and all this kind of stuff, is Uplift as well. Again, and in this, in Shroud, the humans are doing a huge accidental uplift.
It's so fun. That's one of my favorite parts of this book.
It's so good.
Accidental technology transfer.
Yes. And with a really curious, innovation-driven alien that just takes things apart to learn about it. And then just takes it on.
I think it's so funny. They're like, wheels. Oh, we can do wheels. It was ballooning. That was the big thing.
Balloons and wheels.
Oh, if we do balloons. And then they're like, cables that you can send electromagnetic signals through a cable rather than it going via the air. And suddenly you're like, so I'm not going to be blocked by clouds. That is a really fun section. Accidental technology transfer.
And it's really fun to see the alien was obviously feeling quite content with the status quo that they had.
Well, it couldn't feel anything more than that.
Yes, and it had things that separated from themselves and here and there. And it wasn't entirely happy. But it was.
I'm just saying that when it got, there was like a limiting. There's like a limited, like how clever can it be?
Yes,
was limited by geography and thermodynamics and in the region.
How Shroud is.
Yeah, yeah. One thing I really like about this is the idea that the alien. Has to make decisions of what it's going to remember in the future.
Yes.
Like, it's like, when we go over here, I'm going to take this message over there, but the further away that I get, the less well my brain works. So what's the most important thing? And I like that mindset. And
it's very good.
Weirdly enough, it does, coming back to like current technology, AI has to do this.
Yeah.
If I'm having a long conversation of programming stuff in Claude, I'm like, it gets to the point where it's sort of like, look, I'm going to have to compress the previous conversation because it's just the conversation's too long. And I'm like, I could start a new conversation, but then I've got to explain everything again. And so it summarizes its own memory back to...
to discard things.
And it will discard stuff. Yeah. And some of that stuff is going to be important that I'm like, why are you doing this? It's sort of like, oh, sorry. But it can't know that it's forgotten something. And I quite like that like fictional exploration of what it's like to have something that knows it's going to forget stuff in the future.
Yeah.
And it decides what's going to be the most important thing that it should probably remember.
Yeah. And often it is just a kind of fleeting kind of, impression. It's not even something concrete at the end. When it comes down to the very end of something, it just knows, I do remember there's a feeling of that I had about this thing.
I remember there's this feeling that I shouldn't rip its head off.
Yes.
Yeah, it's sort of like, I don't know why I shouldn't rip its head off, but there's something there.
Something in the past told me it was important.
That means I shouldn't rip its head off. And it has to kind of relearn each time.
It's very, very good.
So that's good fun. And then finally, I know that you mentioned this before, we were talking about it before, which is the person who is our main character, whose job it is to be a go-between between all the human experts and the manager and the director. And she's the one who has to give the reports to translate things from all the way thing.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as that happens at the start, when people go, what is your job? You're like, oh, you're not... And the glue that holds it together conduit for understanding between different people. Of course, as soon as that's explained, like in the first like 20% of the book, I was like, well, when she gets down to the surface, she's going to be the conduit between the different
people. That's what I thought.
And then, like, this is what I'm saying, it takes so long for that to actually pay off. And this is why I say I could see where it came.
Yes.
I could see where it was going.
Yeah.
And all I wanted, and I was just kept on waiting for the point that she is going to use her superpower, which is administration and coordination of people in different teams and different groups and different scientific expertise. And then she's going to put it all together and make that connection between the humans. And how it actually happens at the very end, I thought was good.
Yes.
And it was impactful and emotional and self-sacrificing or whatever it's going to be. And I liked it.
Yeah.
But it just took, like, the thing that almost impressed me most about this is just how long it took to get that. I thought that was going to be like, oh, right, we're setting this up.
Yeah.
But there's this, you know, the good 60% of the book in the middle where I thought any moment now she's going to...
You're going to have to know...
Do the
Pause
job
and think.
And it can't just be this like weird you know, too heavy, like 5G, what is it? Everything's under like too much gravity, yeah. Situation, stress, romance that's happening here as well. Like it's just really hard work,
yes,
to get through all of that. Not as a reader, I'm just saying, like as a person, you know.
Yeah, what I really like, because you just mentioned romance, what I found really refreshing in this book was that there was never any sort of I have these big feelings for that person, and oh my god, and I want to touch them and I can't, or whatever, these kind of thing.
Yeah.
Everything was topic relevant, and there were talks about, you know, human interactions and
yeah,
who had sex with whom,
yeah, yeah,
but it was not like things didn't go bad because of, you know,
romance.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that happens so often in books where I think, like, is this really necessary? Is this helpful for the story? I don't need these two main characters now to wildly fall in love.
No, what I'm saying about romance is that it's like just the development of the relationship,
yes,
of two people who had like in some ways like a grudging respect for each other,
yes,
but actually becoming to know each other as humans.
The same trauma.
Yeah. And then, yeah, the trauma of this and the trauma of that and just getting through it. But
yeah,
then also knowing that, nothing can happen. It's not worth it because we'll both go back in the freezer and we'll never see each other. You know,
yeah,
there's all of that kind of like intellectualizing away human physical connections in a dystopian society.
Yeah.
Because it's too dangerous to have personal human connections.
Yeah, it doesn't do anything. It's not helpful.
Yeah. Anything else you want to say? We got to 46 minutes in here and I've kind of got to the point where,
yeah,
like I want to start wrapping it up.
Yeah.
I think Adrian Tchaikovsky has got ideas. None of these ideas, I would say, new to him. Maybe not that none of them are new to him. It's sort of like he's playing in the space, and this is what I always appreciate of Adrian Tchaikovsky. He's always playing in the space of other authors.
Yes.
He's sort of like, well, this person's done this, this person's done this. I'm going to do a reverse bit of this. I'm going to take their idea and run with it a bit further. You know what,
yes,
I mean?
Yes.
So it's not to say he doesn't have any original ideas, but what I like about it is that I can keep seeing these ideas. So I'm like, now he's doing a bit of this. Now, yeah, he's doing a bit of that. Now he's in this area. Now it's a bit,
yeah,
like this.
But he's not relying on the reader knowing that, like, he,
exactly,
is not, and he's not just like, do you remember that?
Yeah, yeah, he's not like saying, all right guys, we've all read, I,
yeah,
mean sometimes authors do this, they'll be like, and now here's an Ansible or here's a this or that,
yeah,
you know, they'll use a bit of like shortcuts to do it, but it's sort of like if you've read Blindsight by Peter Watts and then you read this book, you're like, okay,
mm-hmm,
like we know what it's like to be in a very spiky, very flooded with electromagnetism kind of radiation harsh world,
yeah,
because that's what Blindsight is. Again, there's other stuff going on, but it's like a small team and there's one person who's a leader,
yeah,
and
yeah,
you're like, all right, okay, so it starts off and I'm like, so we're doing Blindsight, are we?
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't that.
No.
But if you've read Blindsight and then you read this book, you're like, oh great, like,
yeah, you can appreciate things,
you can appreciate that, yeah, yeah, and all this adventure,
but it doesn't
stuff
rely on,
no,
that,
exactly, it,
yeah,
doesn't rely on it, and
yeah,
that is the level that I really, and it doesn't rely on me watching television, doesn't rely on,
no,
watching me movies,
no,
there's enough in the book that, but if you see what he's doing, it bring, you're like, oh, so we're gonna do a reverse Deepness in the Sky thing here,
yeah,
it just brings a little bit more flavor, a little bit more understanding to it, and it's just sort of like, yeah, it's just so great for someone just to be like, my job is to write original novels,
yes,
which can conjure up like thoughts and experiences on even nostalgia for previous books,
mm-hmm,
but aren't relying on, hey, you like the 80s, don't you?
Yeah.
You read this book in,
yeah,
the 90s, didn't you?
Yeah.
Hey, and now I'm going to literally have my characters name check,
yes,
the, I mean, of course, then he does do that in some of the books because,
yeah,
the spaceship that turns up is called the Bryn. And I'm like, yeah, I just read David Bryn, you know, like,
yeah,
so it does happen sometimes, but,
yeah,
it's not always like punching you in the
and
face.
And if you miss it, you're not missing out on a huge plot thing,
no,
that then passes you by.
I feel like I'm only picking up on 50% of this, what he's doing here.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Probably, yes.
Like, and you can totally see when you read other people's reviews and you see that they might pick up on something, but also you can tell that they're not picking up on the 50% that you're picking up on,
yes,
for sure. Or they're only picking up 1%. And they're like,
yes,
yeah, but it doesn't make sense. Why is he doing this? It's sort of like, yes, this is his riff on whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's fun.
I want to...
You have some notes.
I want to just read out this. I just put it on Mastodon, hashtag Shroud. And there's a person that posted, Mike McCaffrey. I both loved and hated Shroud by Adrian Tchaikovsky. And then in brackets, and the dozen authors he must keep locked in his basement to churn out science fiction books for him.
Yeah. It is. Adrian Tchaikovsky is this kind of person where I'm like, are you... Like, are you from the future and you're just like passing off other people's science fiction as you, of course it's not, because you can tell he's written, like all of it's written by him. But it's one of those things that's sort of like, are you stealing other people's ideas from the future? But of course he's not. He's stealing, he's borrowing other people's ideas from the past.
Yeah. But what I try to say here is that we all know that there are these ghostwriters out there. So the amount of books he is writing is incredible, and also the level, like it's not something like, you know, sometimes we read a you know, what's the guy's name, Red Shirts guy, John Scalzi,
yeah, but
and you
just,
read his books and
just
you
shit.
Okay, let me just finish without your opinion in between. So when you read his books, you can definitely feel like, oh, he's got a contract for these amounts of books, and then he just pencils them down. They're not particularly outstanding or good or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's fine. It's a fan base. It's serving the fan base. And that's kind of what is necessary. But I never really have these big impressions in that direction from Adrian Tchaikovsky. It feels like every single book of his feels to me like some other people would spend 5 or 10 years writing.
Yeah, but you remember us not managing to get to the end of... Oh, no, I think we did barely get to the end of the final Architecture series.
Yes, okay. That,
and that felt like he was contracted for two more books.
And
it was
here,
rubbish.
Though, this is a standalone book. Yes. We're not going to hear anything more about these people, I hope.
That's all I want, is someone to keep writing standalone novels.
And this is it. That's what we want.
And the good thing about Adrian Tchaikovsky is he's also got multiple long-running fantasy series. So
if
he
you
can
want,
do both.
You can go in both directions. But this is a standalone book. And this feels very much like a standalone book that you can read in one go. I mean, it took me 10 hours to read it. It's a 14-hour audiobook. It's a chunky book, but it's good.
Yeah. I think it's better than the books that we read last year, which was Service Model and Alien Clay.
I didn't read.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
But I said you should read Alien Clay.
Yes.
And I said you should read this book. So hopefully your Adrian Tchaikovsky filter, which is me saying you should read this book.
Yeah.
Don't
it's
bother
good.
With that one.
Yeah.
Or this book isn't for you is good. Yeah. So community reviews on Goodreads, it has got 4.18 stars,
mm-hmm.
which for a standalone book, again, it's a popular author.
Yeah.
People who already know Adrian Tchaikovsky are reading this book.
Yeah.
Because this came out last year. When did it say? It was, February first published. Oh yeah, February 27th, 2025. 436 pages.
So almost exactly a year ago.
Yeah, almost exactly a year ago. So we're a little bit behind, but yeah, probably the best book of Adrian Tchaikovsky's that I've read since probably Elder Race and the first two Children of books as well. I think this is real.
Very strong.
I wouldn't say return to form, because his form for Alien Clay wasn't even that far off.
No.
But again, Alien Clay was just missing that one, like it was just missing a little, like one other factor which really would like bring it to life for me.
Mm-hmm.
And this had like three things which, if any of those had been in Alien Clay, it would have been much more satisfying. And this had all of those, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
It had, you know, and again, even to say the few issues that I have is sometimes the characterizations he writes good characters, but sometimes it's all like, and now I've hit the tone for this character and I'm just going to keep doing that for the rest of the book.
That's
and I'm like, I want, you know, not just from the main character, but from other characters. I'm like, a little bit of development for some of these. Like if someone starts off a coward and someone else starts off a hero, and then another person starts off as someone who's emotionally well-balanced, and someone starts off as the opposite. And at the end, all four of those characters are in the same place in the book and stuff's just happened to them. So the kind of some of the stuff that's happened in the fantasy series as well. You spend a lot of time with these characters and at the end, they know more stuff. And they're in a different life situation, but I'm like, and the characters should have moved on and evolved and got to the next thing, which is
a bit more,
Which is fine. Like, again, it's not a it's not a complaint. It's just sort of like sometimes, well, it is a complaint. Like, I sometimes want his characters to end the book in a slightly different place emotionally and character-wise. That's what it's called, character arc, rather than the character knows more stuff.
Yes.
Isn't a character arc.
Yeah.
That is not an emotional journey. I mean, they sometimes go on a journey, but it's often an intellectual journey rather than an emotional journey or a character journey.
Some character in this book, some characters do have that a little bit, but others just don't really.
But yeah, again, it's so much of a capsule novel with these two. We're just going to spend a lot of time with these two people getting through this.
And I think that is one of my criticisms, is that in the middle, it was dragging on a little bit in the middle.
There is a bit too much in the middle.
Too many caves and again
many descriptions of another spiky thing.
Yes.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, and of course it is setting it up because by the end we need to know the scale of it and we need to know that the alien, all of these different pockets
really
of aliens
well.
Are all going to become the same alien or they're all going to join up and all the,
and like, also that they are different aliens.
Yeah.
It's not just one thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's multiple things. And so we do get that.
I understand it, but as you're going through it, you're like, okay, if this had been like one fewer exotic alien location and one fewer encounter with a new thing and one fewer like this the leg of our thing is broken and now we've had to fix it again.
Yes.
Like there was just it was just quite a bit of it felt like I was in a loop, like a video game loop of like, and now this is broken and now we got to level this up and fix it and then we get back and now the leg is working again. And I'm like, ah, if the leg can just keep working again, once we know it's broken once and it can just repair itself, we don't have to go back into another loop of now the leg's broken and it's repaired
itself.
That
was one of the most frustrating things over the course of their journey that I experienced, is that they obviously understood at some point that the alien helped them out multiple times. And they kept ignorantly thinking, oh, we need to fix it.
Yeah.
If at that point you're not intelligent enough, literally, to think, oh, maybe I should pause, try my very best to communicate and to see if they can help us out more.
I was always this kind of thing, like, look, you can draw, like, there's some sand here or some ice here or whatever.
Or try anything.
Draw a line
just
in the sand.
Just be creative in something. Yeah. And they all they did was doot, and like, okay, that's how far they went. Like, really? This is how far humans would explore communication?
Right then. No. Friends who've reviewed it, lots of 5-star reviewed. Michael, 4 stars. B, Richard, Tom, 5 stars. A few 3 stars from Catherine. M rates it 2 stars. Zivan, 4 stars. And Luke C is 3 stars. Didn't finish at 60%. A book he didn't finish, he still gives 3 stars to, which I don't understand.
Well, that's personal ratings. Obviously, he has a different...
Yep. That's the thing. Either way, quite a lot of people have rated it 5 stars. A few more people rated it 4 stars. So this is generally considered to be a 4-star book by our audience. And like I say, when you look at the community reviews in general...
5 and 4 stars.
Well, it's 4 and 5 stars, really.
Yeah.
41% 4 stars, 40% 5 stars. And I think that's a good balance. Like, I think if you're reading this, like, there's very, 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 very few 1-star and 2-star reviews.
Yeah.
A few 3-star reviews, but like... 81% of people who've read this book give it at least 4 stars and 5 stars. Or 5 stars. 80% of people, 81% of people are giving it a 4, between 4 and 5 stars.
Yeah.
On average. So what are you going to give it?
I give it 4.5.
Okay. I will
give this 4.75, but like a little bit off 5.
Yeah. Let's just round it to 4.5.
Yeah.
So I'm also giving it 4.5.
Okay.
So let's say not a perfect book, a few too many loops. I want a bit more characterization, but what is in the book and what it's very good.
Very good.
It's just very good.
And one more remark from my side.
Oh yeah.
I identify a lot with Juna.
Yeah.
In many, many ways.
Why?
So
are you
much.
The beleaguered administrative assistant?
Yes, that kind of like I read this book and I was sick for quite some time and like very fatigued and very, you know, just exhausted. And then read this book and I thought, oh, Yes, the communication between people who are not emotionally able enough to put their personality aside a little bit to try to communicate with another person that might not be quite as them. And
so, yes, this book,
my
and
work,
I just want to say exactly, Alien Clay,
that.
As someone who also works in a university, and you know, like, you had the same reaction there. You're like, I also work in an academic situation and have to work with, you know, that
building
kind of
bridges,
thing.
Communicate between people.
What do you think about us finishing this episode in under an hour?
Yeah, let's do it.
Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.